Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 7th, 2014. Three people are reported killed in a shootout in eastern Equatorial State.
Last night, the soldiers started shooting in their barrack, and this morning they came into the community and they started burning the houses. Over 20 or 30 houses have been burned to ashes. Three people are confirmed dead.
And UNMISS says a civilian protection mandate in South Sudan will continue until peace is restored in the country.
Does not, and I repeat, does not, as the previous mandate, include capacity building, peace building, and security sector reform.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least three people are reported dead and possibly as many as 30 homes burned to the ground after government soldiers went on rampage this morning in Chukudum, Budi County of Eastern Equatorial State. According to eyewitness, the attack occurred after a soldier was killed the night before by unknown gunmen while soldiers were patrolling the area. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has more.
Lopoyok Agostino, a resident of Chukudum, tells VOA police have been conducting regular patrols in the area since an 8 p.m. to dawn curfew was enforced a month ago. He says a confrontation during last night's patrol prompted today's attack.
There was a patrol taking place in Chukudum by the soldiers. Then yesterday at around 9 p.m., I think they met with the unknown gunman and they exchanged gunfire. And one of the soldiers was killed instantly. Then at the mid of the night, last night, the soldiers started shooting in their barrack. And this morning they came into the community and they started burning the houses. And at least over 20 or 30 houses have been burned to ashes. And three people are confirmed dead.
Lopoyok, who works with a humanitarian organization in the area, says he and many other residents fled to the Community Development Support Office compound. He says his pregnant daughter was beaten when soldiers attacked her home this morning.
People are really fearing to get into their homes. Like now, the way as I'm speaking to you, I wish there was a camera. You could see people on my background. There are at least not less than 500 children and women in one of the CDSS compound where mostly people are taking refuge. People are in the bushes. Most of the families and children have seen they ran in the morning. They have never met. They are still in the bushes.
A local member of parliament, Joseph Lokodo, says, according to reports he received, the incident did take place.
We also had the same as members of parliament from Budi, we had telephone conversation with our locals.
Lokodo says he does not want to say more until he is back home. For now, eyewitnesses say the gunshots have subsided and soldiers have gone back to their barracks. However, they say the situation is still very tense and many residents remain in hiding. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
Meanwhile, a renowned South Sudanese church leader is urging South Sudan's warring parties to immediately end the nearly 10-month-old conflict. Bishop Emeritus Paride Taban of Torit Catholic Diocese is appealing to government and rebel forces to stay committed to peace, which he says are the only way to end the crisis. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Bishop Emeritus Paride Taban, winner of the 2013 Sergio Vieira de Mello Peace Prize, tells VOA far too many people have died in the conflict and more will die if a peace deal is not reached. He has a blunt message for both President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar.
Stop killing innocent people. If you are for the people, the misery of the people, the death of the people should make you stop.
Some media reports have suggested that Government and rebel forces are preparing to resume fighting when the rainy season stops in a few weeks and movement becomes easier. But Bishop Taban says he believes it's only through peaceful means that leaders will resolve the conflict.
The gun, the violence cannot solve anything. Talking, sitting down, looking to the situation and bringing other people to help us to solve this, it can happen. Gun was used when people were not educated, when people were primitive, but at present, modern life, where people are educated, they can sit down and think and talk on issues and come to the logical solution.
Peace talks have started and stopped many times between the government and the opposition for the past 9 months, but have made little, if any, progress so far. Forming a power-sharing government remains one of the most contentious issues in the talks. The two sides also disagree over whether a prime minister should be appointed and whether that person should be eligible to run for president at the end of an interim period. Bishop Taban says rather than focus on personal interests, the leaders should put the South Sudanese people first and realize they have suffered enough.
Peace talk will move in the right direction when the people who are negotiating put their eyes on the people, not on the leadership, because today the innocent people are dying. And if they were to talk more and stopping the death of innocent people who are being killed from both sides, that would bring an end.
Taban advises the negotiators on both sides to engage the citizens through wider consultations on the peace talks to ensure they lead to lasting peace.
People should be united and say with one voice. We need one voice, both South Sudanese and the negotiator, the IGAD community, talk together and also go and find the opinion of the people from the grassroots.
Last Friday, the Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which brought the two sides together in Ethiopia, adjourned the talks for 2 weeks to allow negotiators time to consult with their leaders. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The top United Nations official in South Sudan says peacekeepers are set to increase patrol outside their bases and will stick with its current mandate, protect civilians living in fighting zones. The new special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan told reporters in Juba her job is to strictly implement the mandate of the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, which focuses on protection of civilians. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has more.
Loy stressed that the mandate the UN Security Council gave UNMISS in May
does not, and I repeat, does not, as the previous mandate, include capacity building, peace building, and security sector reform.
The new mandate focuses on four issues, she says.
Protection of civilians, monitoring and investigating human rights violations, facilitating the delivery of humanitarian assistance, and support to the implementation of cessation of hostilities agreement.
She gave no indication that the Security Council will shift the focus back to nation building until the fighting in South Sudan ends. President Salva Kiir asked in his speech to the UN General Assembly last month that UNMISS go back to helping South Sudan build its young democracy and stop focusing on the protection of civilians. But Loy says that before that happens,
both parties, the government and the opposition, have to bring about peace. But in the meantime, until a peace agreement has been reached, sooner rather than later, we need to ensure protection of civilians. We need to ensure that humanitarian assistance reaches areas of need, and we need to ensure that there is accountability for human rights violations.
Loy arrived in South Sudan more than a month ago. She spent her first 5 weeks in the country traveling to Upper Nile, Jungle, and Unity State, the three areas most affected by the 10-month conflict in South Sudan. She also met with President Kiir, government officials, and diplomats. She says her first months in South Sudan
has been an informative and learning experience. But it has also been a month that has had a sobering impact on me.
She said that as peace talks for South Sudan drag on slowly in Ethiopia, the UN is providing shelter to nearly 100,000 people in its camps. But that is just a drop in the ocean compared to the huge numbers of people who have fled their homes during 10 months of fighting in South Sudan, Loy says.
It should not be forgotten that over 1 million people are displaced in the country because of the conflict. So there are many more internally displaced people in South Sudan than those in the UN compound.
Loy touched on another issue addressed by President Kiir in his speech at the United Nations when she said UNMISS is doing what it can to improve security around the country so that people can go back home.
These protection of civilian sites are not viable long-term solutions for the flight of their inhabitants. UNMISS and the humanitarian partners are working very closely on durable and sustainable solutions, including encouraging the voluntary, and I underline voluntary, return of IDPs to their homes.
But she stressed that the only thing that will convince South Sudanese that they can go back home is if peace returns to the country. And to achieve that, Loy says, the warring sides have to agree to compromise. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, scientists know more about what causes Nodding syndrome, a disease that affects many people in East Africa. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what social media do you use and what for?
I use WhatsApp. It's faster in communicating whatever you want to send to anybody. So
I use Facebook and I use Twitter. Facebook for chatting with my friends, connecting, yeah. And while I use Twitter to access some information as well as disseminate information, yeah, and link with other people internationally, yeah.
Yeah, purposely because Facebook is a social media where you can be able to get access to all the friends, regardless of where they are. Like in particular, I have most of my friends whom we departed so many years ago, but with the help of Facebook now, I can be able to interact with them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about Nodding syndrome. Many children in northern Uganda, Tanzania, and South Sudan are afflicted with this crippling disease in its early stages. Nodding syndrome is characterized by an involuntary nodding of the head. Now, after decades of research, scientists believe they know how the disease is spread. A new report suggests that a black fly's infected with another parasite may be capable of passing a secondary pathogen that causes Nodding syndrome. Eskil Patterson is a professor of tropical medicine and infectious diseases at Aarhus University Hospital in Denmark. Douglas Mpuga reached out to him there by phone to find out more.
We don't know what is causing the Nodding disease, but we don't know how it is spread. So that's the fact of it. The paper that we just published in the International Journal of Infectious Diseases put forward a hypothesis that it is related to African river blindness, and that is spread by black flies. And if that hypothesis is right, then it will be spread by black flies, but it is still just a hypothesis and not a true fact.
There's been decades of research to determine the exact cause of this Nodding disease. How this hypothesis of yours, how far does it take us? Do we know more now than we knew before?
I think that there's a lot of possibilities that have been excluded, but you still do not have a virus or a bacteria where you can say, well, this is the exact cause. So it's still an enigma. And it could be that we are on the wrong track. So what we have published is a hypothesis, and then you have to dig more into it and see if the hypothesis can stand up for further scrutiny.
Are there other related research that point to your hypothesis?
No, not really, because what they've been looking for is known viruses in the central nervous system of these victims, and they have not found any. And they've been looking for white blood cells in the spinal fluid, which is associated with infections, and that looks normal. So if this is an infection, we still have no clue what it is, and we would need to go back and look once more in the victims, and we would also, as proposed in this paper, have to look in the black flies to see if we can find microorganisms in the black flies which can be transmitted to humans.
If your hypothesis was true, how common would that be for, say, one insect to spread two types of diseases?
Well, it's very well known that insects can spread diseases. As I said, black flies are already spreading African river blindness. You have malaria mosquitoes spreading malaria. You have yellow fever mosquitoes spreading yellow fever and other viral infections, dengue fever, and you have chikungunya in the Caribbean right now. So it's very common that insects can spread infections to humans.
It seems there are a lot of questions still that remain unanswered as far as the spreading of the nodding disease is concerned. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that remain, both investigating the patients, and there's also, if this is a hypothesis, you will have to catch a lot of black flies and see if you can identify bacteria or viruses beside the African river blindness parasite, which would be in the black fly.
And lastly, Dr. Peterson, if your hypothesis be true that the disease may be spread by these flies, what would explain for the disease coming on and off in the regions where it's prevalent?
The regions where it has been flaring up is regions where you have turmoil, and if you have a civil war and so on, then the mosquito control programs are not really working. You can have displaced populations moving from endemic to non-endemic areas, so they have no immunity. So there are very many different explanations that could explain why it's flaring up and on. It is very usual for infectious diseases, and especially vector-borne infectious diseases, where you both have the human population and the vectors, and both of them can be moving and flaring up and down. The vectors are prone to rainfall, for instance. So there's a lot of different factors here.
That was Eskid Patterson, a professor of tropical medicine and infectious diseases at Aarhus University in Denmark. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpogwa from Aarhus, Denmark. From Denmark, we come back to South Sudan. There is a sharp increase in crime in Wau, the state capital of Western Bahr el Ghazal state. Traders say their shops are being broken into on a regular basis, even though they pay the state government to provide security. As VOA fellow Michael Atit reports, government officials say they have a new strategy to patrol the market areas in Wau, and they think it's working.
36-year-old Yasin Abdurrahman is a Sudanese shopkeeper. He says his shop was broken into 3 days ago. The thieves made off with goods and around 2,000 South Sudanese pounds, he says.
This is the second time, and in the previous incident, they took many things, but this time they took money also. I reported to the police, but till now there's nothing. Even if I follow this case, I don't think it will get back. So it is better I stay. I can do nothing.
Walt Charles is the chairperson of the Chamber of Commerce in Wau. He says that the latest crime wave in Wau has left many traders worried about security. Traders complain that the authorities are not taking enough action to stop the break-ins, he says.
If there's an incident of robbery, they are supposed to see the team which was assigned in that location. But that's not the case here. We have discussed these so many times with security organs in our meetings. There is no accountability.
Last week, three shops were looted in a High Salam residential area in Wau. The mayor of Wau, Arcangelo Anyar Anyar, says his security forces are working around the clock to provide security for traders in Wau. Anyar insists there is accountability in the town. He says some suspected thieves have been caught and they are now in jail.
Many goods in the administration were recovered, and a sizable number of them were handled, and then they were taken into the court, and those were fined with the clear evidence were punished.
Anyar says many of the burglaries are organized by a group of street boys who come from neighboring Warab and northern Baragazal states. Last year, there was a similar spate of burglaries in Wau. The government stepped in and deployed military police in all the town markets to maintain security. Anyar says he is taking similar steps to stop the new crime wave, and that seems to be having a right effect.
In the night, we have the night patrolling teams in the market and in the quarter. In the last meeting that we have conducted, the number of crimes in the kids before that was about 52. The last meeting, the number of these seven cases were dropping to less than 10.
Crime may be down in Wau, but until shopkeepers feel safe, they will continue to press the government to do even more to improve the security. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Spanish officials are investigating how a nurse in Madrid contracted the Ebola virus, becoming the first person known to catch the virus outside West Africa, the flashpoint of the current outbreak. Health officials say the woman helped to treat two Spanish missionary priests who died last month after being flown back from Liberia and Sierra Leone. But they say all proper safety procedures were followed in the care of the missionaries. The nurse is being treated at Carlos II Hospital in Madrid. The latest round of U.S.-led coalition airstrikes in Syria has failed to stop Islamic State militants from advancing on the border town of Kobani. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, speaking to refugees in a camp near Islahiya, said today the area is on the verge of falling to the militants after a nearly three-week battle with Kurdish fighters. Mr. Erdogan said the militants cannot be stopped by airstrikes alone. He said there needs to be coordination with troops on the ground. And finally, Hong Kong students and government officials say they have reached an agreement to begin formal talks on demands for political reforms later this week. After meeting with student representatives this evening, Undersecretary of Constitutional Affairs Law Kong-wah said talks with the territory's chief secretary, Carrie Lam, would begin on Friday. The news comes as most schools and businesses reopened in the former British colony as student-led protest sites dwindled to hundreds of participants. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
The Hague-based International Criminal Court has begun a two-day status hearing on the case against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. The Kenyan leader faces crime charges against humanity related to his alleged role in the post-election violence 7 years ago in Kenya. From Paris, Lisha Bryan reports for VOA that Mr. Kenyatta is expected to attend Wednesday's wrap-up hearing.
Yes, that's the end of this status conference today.
The first day of the status hearing at the International Criminal Court pretty much ended the way it began, with the prosecution claiming the Kenyan government was blocking access to key documents for its case against President Uhuru Kenyatta, and the defense arguing it was doing its best to comply. At the end of the two-hour hearing, prosecution lawyer Benjamin Gumpert summed up his frustrations.
there has been no indication from the representative of the government of Kenya that they intend to adopt any of the measures which the prosecution has urged upon them and which in some cases the Chamber has suggested they should adopt to overcome what they say is the impossibility of providing any more material. And as long as that remains the case, then we are, I would respectfully submit, deadlocked.
Kenya's president faces 5 counts at the ICC for his alleged role in overseeing post-election violence in late 2007 and early 2008 that killed about 1,100 people and displaced more than 500,000. Mr. Kenyatta says he is innocent.
You are saying that the only update is provision of this material.
It is, and I'm trying to briefly describe to your honours what the material is. If you only want me to...
Very briefly, please.
Well, I shall.
Much of Tuesday's hearing was spent wading through bureaucratic details as the prosecution described unsuccessful efforts to get complete records of Mr. Kenyatta's bank statements, phone calls, and tax filings. It argues these documents will help prove Mr. Kenyatta's role in bankrolling and orchestrating the violence. But Kenya Attorney General Getu Migai says the prosecution's demands were sometimes impossible to meet.
We have come here today offering many alternatives, including requesting, like we have done before, for the prosecution to give us actionable information, material that can help us to access. Please give us that information. We will supply it. Whatever you need, within 72 hours.
The status conference aims to set a date for Mr. Kenyatta's trial, but the prosecution says its case is faltering, not just for lack of key documents, but because witnesses have been intimidated to change their story or pull out. The court has summoned Mr. Kenyatta to appear Wednesday, which will make him the first sitting president to appear before the ICC. He's temporarily handed power over to Deputy President William Ruto, who is also on trial at the ICC for alleged crimes against humanity, charges Ruto has denied. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Homeless by Kenyan Boys Choir. We have been listening to the Kenyan Boys Choir with the song Homeless. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.